More than 50 years after its release, A Hard Day's Night remains a beloved film, capturing the infectious energy of the young Beatles at the height of Beatlemania. A new book of mostly never-before-published photographs, text, and ephemera, conceived, curated, and edited by attorney, writer, and philanthropist Martha Karsh, offers a behind-the-scenes look at the band's first film and celebrates its enduring legacy while evoking the chaos and excitement of 36 hours in the life of the Fab Four. The Beatles, A Hard Day's Night, a private archive, is published by Fiden, and I'm very pleased that it brings Martha Karsh to our show today. Hello.
Hi.
How'd you become involved in this project? This is not just a book idea that you had.
No, the whole idea of it really came about because I was trying to think of a great 60th birthday present for my husband, which, you know, seems like a random reason to get put together a book. But in 2001, we acquired the copyright to the film A Hard Day's Night.
It had been previously owned by its producer, Walter Shenson?
Correct. And Walter passed away right about that time. And his son didn't want to retain the film rights. And he had gone to Oxford with a friend of ours, knew of our interest in rock and roll memorabilia and Beatles in particular, called my husband, said, "Are you interested?" And shortly thereafter, we struck a deal.
Did you acquire his photography collection from the film along with the film?
It's interesting. We didn't really know what we had acquired until it arrived at 17 boxes, actually, at our house. We knew, of course, we owned the copyright, but when the boxes came, it was like a treasure hunt. There were really carefully preserved large format negatives. There was an album full of contact sheet prints, a bound script, and then a whole bunch of sort of random things that were from the period from at or around the release of the film.
But these are photographs that have nothing to do with the Harry Benson film photos that made the Beatles famous around this time?
No. No, these were all photographs. There were two photographers that were represented in this collection. One is Robert Freeman, who did all the headshots for the very famous albums. Both the UK and the US album have the Beatles headshots, and all 98 headshots made their way into the book in the end papers. And then there were about 3,000 photographs taken by Bert Kahn on the set while the cameras were rolling, while the cameras were not rolling, just the Beatles goofing around, all kinds of things.
Is it just a coincidence that you share a last name with the great portrait photographer Yusuf Karsh?
It's just a coincidence. I wish it wasn't, but it is.
For those listeners who have never seen the film, could you give us a brief synopsis?
Sure. It's really an exaggerated day in the life of the Beatles. So it's art imitating life, imitating art. The Beatles, in their heyday, and really when they sort of landed on Earth, we're talking about 1963, late 1963, early 1964, were in a constant crowd of people. There was tumult around them, but they remained very calm, and they were kind of cheeky about the whole thing. The film is basically about a day in the life, and they're supposed to be doing a TV show. So there's the Beatles being calm, and there's the TV director being harassed by the whole thing.
In England, audiences might have spotted the influence of The Goon Show, which
right.
has been called both Dadaist and surrealist in spirit, and this movie has that kind of feeling. But what do you think intrigued American audiences? Because they wouldn't have been aware of The Goon Show, even though I think Peter Sellers was already famous in this country.
It's a good question. Late 1963, Capitol Records, which was the U.S., had passed on several Beatles tunes. They just didn't pick them up, but then they took one, I Want to Hold Your Hand. And within a couple weeks, it became a number one hit in the U.S.
Wasn't it originally released by VJ Records, a small label that that mostly handled black artists?
You know, I'm not sure about that. But I know that Capitol released it in the U.S. And by March of 64, so just 3 months later, the Beatles in the U.S., and they were relatively new to the U.S., had the 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 spots on the U.S. Billboard 100.
And then they had the Ed Sullivan Show.
Correct. So when they arrived in the U.S. February 1964, they did 2 Ed Sullivan shows, and it was like everything changed.
Before A Hard Day's Night was made, there had been some other movies that featured pop stars, Jailhouse Rock and Blue Hawaii with Elvis Presley. But A Hard Day's Night was actually critically acclaimed as something more than just a star vehicle. Time magazine rated it as one of the all-time great 100 films. It's been credited as being one of the most influential music films of all time. It inspired other rock films like John Borman's Having a Wild Weekend with a Dave Clark 5, numerous spy films, which is interesting, and, of course, the Monkees television series, also pop music videos.
Right.
So this is all the Beatles, or how much should we credit Richard Lester, who directed the film?
I think both of them. I mean, certainly it was the Beatles, but it was a great collaboration. The Beatles were new. They were new music. They were interested in media changing. The time was changing. And really, the film, critically acclaimed in 1964, and still when it was re-released 50 years later, I read all of the reviews, and there were maybe 100, all still saying the same thing. It's fresh and still new.
Well, when it was first released, Andrew Sarris, who was the great critic of art films, called it the Citizen Kane of jukebox movies. Lester writes your book's foreword, and he says that he knew very quickly that no matter what he did with his career afterward, he would always be known as the director of A Hard Day's Night. But he doesn't seem to be bothered by that.
You know, he's a lovely man. I met him at the 50th anniversary premiere at the BFI in London. And I think it was one of those things where he's done many things in his life, and he's really just a gracious, lovely man. But because of the notoriety and celebrity of this film, he knows that this will be his, you know, certainly one of the main things he'll be known for.
I'm speaking with Martha Karsh, who is the editor of The Beatles, A Hard Day's Night, a private archive, what they used to call a coffee table book.
Right.
Huge, with fabulous photographs, a text by Mark Lewison, forward by Richard Lester and also Jeff Dyer. It is published by Phaidon. Can you tell us briefly about your conception of this book?
Yes. Originally, my conception was we owned this material. I reviewed it, really looked at it hard while Criterion Collection was working on the restoration for the 50th anniversary re-release. And the material is so rich and so wonderful, including all the ephemera, you know, fan mail and the original budget and newspaper clippings that Walter Shenson felt were important enough to save, that I thought this would be a great book to be less textual, although I wanted very authoritative text, but more visual, more sensory, where you could touch it and feel it, and more interactive.
I'm struck by the playful, almost innocent nature of the band that comes across in these photos, similar to the things that made Harry Benson famous when he shot them jumping on a bed. But then when you think of the Beatles 5 years later with the release of the White Album, you have a completely different feel to the group. I guess the world changed for them?
I think the world changed for them. When they did this film, it was early in their careers. They were in their early 20s. And they did have a freshness and a newness and kind of a naivete about them that I think comes through in the film. And the film was shot in only about 6 weeks, and it was sandwiched between their trip to the U.S. for the Ed Sullivan Show and a European tour, and really they were studying their lines in between takes. Actually, there's some pictures in the book of them studying their lines.
And did they create any of the lines, or were they just going along with the script?
I think there was some ad-libbing going on. We've looked at the script, and it's marked up, and there are various places where they ad-libbed.
Alan Owens wrote the script.
Correct.
The book has the feel of a fan's scrapbook. There are ticket stubs. There are cartoons. All sorts of things that people may forget. How important was Mark Lewisohn's contribution? He wrote the inscriptions for the photos and such here, but isn't he working on a 3-volume history of the band?
He is, and I met
three
Mark,
volumes.
3 volumes. He's on number 2 now. He is really considered the world expert on the Beatles. I met him also at the premiere, the London premiere of the re-release, and was very taken with his knowledge. It's encyclopedic on the Beatles. He also has a very colloquial and lively way of writing, so I was really happy that he agreed to do the writing and to do the captions in the book.
We learned that one person on whom the Beatles didn't have a positive effect was the columnist William F. Buckley, Jr. What can you tell us about his column from September 1964, which you've also included in this book?
It's one of my favorite pieces. I liked it so much that we hunted down his son, who is the trustee of his papers. Chris Buckley, exactly, that were donated to Yale. And he said, I'll allow you to reprint it as long as you make a donation to Yale, which I happily did. The reason I love the piece is because it's really the ultimate irony. He attends a concert with his 13-year-old niece, I believe, and says the Beatles are not just awful, they're god-awful, and they qualify as the crowned heads of anti-music. And if anybody was ever wrong, it was that column.
Well, they actually sound more like they come out of the tradition, the Tin Pan Alley tradition of writing real melodies, real tunes. Mm-hmm. You can only wonder what William F. Buckley would think about today's music.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. The other thing that's amazing about their music is they were obligated to write 7 songs for the film. 5 of the songs they wrote and laid down at Abbey Road Studios in 4 days. That was 5. The 6th one was the title song, A Hard Day's Night, which John Lennon wrote on the back of a birthday card to his son in 1 day. And the 7th song had been a placeholder for the most famous scene in the movie where they're jumping around in the field. And they had used Can't Buy Me Love as a placeholder, and everybody became so fond of that, they said, okay, we'll dispense with the 7th one and we'll use that. And now it's, you know, goes down in history as one of the most iconic songs and scenes.
You remember when you first saw the Beatles? Were you a kid at
yes.
the time?
Yes, I was probably 9 or 10 when I first saw them.
Did people ask you the question that they seem to ask everybody? Do you have a favorite Beatle?
I did. George. I thought George was the cutest.
Uh-huh.
But well, so did Patty Boyd.
Most people liked John or Paul, but I can understand that. Then they all had their own special qualities. Ringo is still out there doing stuff. And Paul, of course, is working harder, as hard as he ever did.
And both of those, I should say, I mean, they were both lovely because they personalized the book for Bruce. They both loved the book. Paul sent me a thank you note afterwards. I think that, you know, he felt very good about the book. By the way, as did Richard Lester. He also wrote a note to my husband. They're out there. I mean, we were just at Desert Trip, and Paul McCartney performed for 85,000 people. It was marvelous.
We're going to go out with that hit song, Can't Buy Me Love. I'm not sure I agree with that lyric, but that's a whole other matter. My great thanks to you for coming by to talk about the this book called The Beatles, A Hard Day's Night, A Private Archive. Martha Karsh, whose career also involves all sorts of other things.
Yes.
Law.
I'm a lawyer by training. I mainly do philanthropy now in education.
It's been a pleasure having you on our show.
Thank you so much.
Can't buy me love. Makes you feel alright. I'll get you anything, my friend, if it makes you feel alright. 'Cause I